Again, this is Pacifica Radio's live coverage of the House Select Committee's investigation into the January 6th attacks on the United States Capitol. I'm Mitch Jezerich. We are in our post show. And now we want to look at another investigation that is occurring into what happened in the 2020 election. Of course, the Justice Department has its own concurrent investigation that it is involved in. But there's also an investigation, an important investigation that could have some real legal ramifications occurring in Georgia itself, in fact, in Folsom County. We now go to Georgia, where we're joined by Clark D. Cunningham. Clark Cunningham is the W. Lee Burge Chair of Law and Ethics and Professor of Law at Georgia State University. He is also the Director of the National Institute for Teaching Ethics and Professionalism, and he has been following this investigation closely. Professor Cunningham, thank you for your time.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Mitch.
Tell me, just lay out for me, what is happening right now with your district attorney in Folsom County concerning this investigation?
Fulton County, actually.
Fulton County, forgive me.
Fulton County, where the city of Atlanta and Fulton County largely overlap, and the city of Atlanta is also the state capital. So we're sort of at the center of things. And many of Trump's activities in relation to Georgia actually happened in the city of Atlanta because we are the state capital. So the Fulton County District Attorney has a special grand jury that's been authorized by the Superior Court here that has a single mission, which is to investigate interference with the 2020 election in Georgia. And the special grand juries are very unusual. This one is has at least a year of existence, has a very broad mandate, and although this special grand jury does not have the power to indict, it has the power to recommend that indictments be issued. The special grand jury is very hard at work. The biggest news we've had probably in the last day or so is they issued a subpoena to Senator Lindsey Graham, which he is vigorously fighting, but at the moment he's under a court order to appear in front of the grand jury at the beginning of August to answer questions about phone calls he made to the Georgia Secretary of State, apparently on behalf of the Trump campaign.
What do we know about those phone calls?
Well, we actually thought there was only one phone call until the subpoena was authorized a few days ago. All that I know about the phone calls, other than what appears in the court papers, is apparently Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, who was the recipient of the famous phone call in January, has told us. According to Secretary of State Raffensperger, Senator Graham called, wanted to talk about procedures for dealing with absentee ballots, something that we know that President Trump was obsessed about. According to Secretary of State Raffensperger, Senator Graham was floating the idea that if in a particular county like Fulton County, which is the heart of Atlanta and went heavily for Biden, if a certain number of absentee ballots could be determined to be suspect in terms of whether the signatures matched, whether the Secretary of State had the power to simply throw out all the absentee ballots in a given jurisdiction like Fulton County, which might have probably been enough to swing the state of Georgia from Biden to Trump. So that's Secretary of State Raffensperger's account of the phone call. If true, it's a shocking phone call. The Senator Graham says that didn't happen at all. We'll see if he has a chance to tell his story under oath to the grand jury.
Certainly ethically questionable. Would it be illegal?
Quite possibly. It's a solicitation of election fraud is a crime. It's a felony in Georgia. And that's one of the leading possible points of investigation for the Fulton County Grand Jury. Probably starts off with the famous phone call from President Trump to Secretary of State Raffensperger, where he's asking for the Secretary of State to recalculate the votes so that he gets at least one more vote than he needs to carry the state. That phone call certainly seemed to be encouraging the Secretary of State to commit election fraud, and soliciting election fraud is a felony. So if the if Senator Graham's phone call is considered part of that same pattern or plan or scheme to throw out all the absentee ballots in a county because some of them were arguably suspect, would be almost certainly not authorized under Georgia law. And so to do so would probably be a form of election fraud. And he may have been soliciting that kind of election fraud. And why a senator from South Carolina is making that kind of a phone call is a really good question.
Yeah. That phone call from Donald Trump certainly is going to go down in history. I mean, it's the phone call in which he's like, look, I just need 11,000 votes. That's it.
Right. I commented on another broadcast. President Trump has described his phone call to Secretary of State Raffensperger as a perfect phone call, which resonates because, of course, that's how he described his phone call to the president of the Ukraine. My comment when I heard that is, he calls it perfect. It seems to me it was perfectly incriminating. There's no doubt that he made the phone call. It's recorded, and one could wonder whether it would be possible to obtain a conviction simply by playing the recording in front of a jury and then asking them to deliberate.
Could Donald Trump be subpoenaed in this investigation?
He certainly could be. He certainly could be. I think that that's not going to happen anytime soon. I'm not the district attorney who's a highly regarded law enforcement official here in Georgia with decades of experience, a terrific, skilled strategist, a very person of considerable integrity. Whether she does that or not, I speculated that it probably would not be that useful. If you call him and he takes the Fifth Amendment, that doesn't really do much for you. Yes, if he made statements under oath to the grand jury that were proved to be wrong, he could be prosecuted for perjury. That might be about the only benefit of it. We have so many public statements by him and so much other evidence that it's not clear that would be worth doing. There'd be a lot of legal challenges raised to try to subpoena the ex-president. So I think it's more likely, I'm not saying he will be indicted, but I think it's more likely that he'll be indicted for felonies than he would be subpoenaed first to testify in front of a grand jury.
I think it's very likely he could be indicted.
I think it's entirely possible. The district attorney, who of course is circumspect, says she's not ruling out any possibilities. But other people are in their sights. Rudy Giuliani, I think, is very much at risk of being indicted. I think Mark Meadows may be at considerable risk. John Eastman, I think, is at considerable risk. The attorney that kind of came up with the scheme for the vice president to reject votes on January 6th. There's been a thought that there's liability for Trump and others for the solicitation of terrorists of death threats, which has been a horrible problem in Georgia. Secretary of State Raffensperger, his wife, many other people involved in the election process in Georgia received all kinds of death threats. There was a famous press conference where his chief deputy said this has got to stop and implored directly to the president to tell his followers to stop making these phone calls, and then they kept on going on. Raffensperger and his wife temporarily moved out of their house. So we really have been in the middle of the storm here in Georgia and continue to be.
What do you think are the most serious charges that could come down?
I think, and today's hearing was interesting for that. We're beginning to see probably at least three different sort of threads come together. One of the things that the district attorney here in Georgia is doing is apparently pursuing what could be called a criminal conspiracy approach. It's actually under what's called the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organization Act, or RICO, which is modeled after a federal law that was originally designed to deal with, the mob. But the idea is that if you can prove that an organization or enterprise is corrupt, and that you can then go after prosecuting all the people who participate in that corrupt operation. And so she may arguably be developing a theory that the Trump campaign or Stop the Steal campaign was in effect a criminal enterprise. And everybody who is part of trying to make that enterprise work is facing criminal liability. So now what we see is we see lots of different pieces from the January 6th committee. We saw the effort to sort of overthrow the acting attorney general at the Department of Justice. We saw the pressure campaigns on state officials. We heard a lot today about the lead up to the riot on January 6th. They may not be isolated acts. That's very much what the January 6th committee is trying to establish, is that they all fit together. And they may fit together into what could be a RICO conspiracy case here in Georgia, which could be very powerful. Of all the different things that the Trump campaign was trying to do to overthrow the election and keep Trump in power, I think probably the piece that was most clearly illegal was the so-called fake elector scheme. And that was the what happened in Georgia and I think six other swing states when on the day that came for the electors to meet nationwide, the people who were pledged to vote for Trump, had he carried the popular vote in the state of Georgia, of course they had no legal status because he didn't. The vote had been certified for Biden, but they basically snuck into the state capitol, went into a separate room, and pretended that they were the duly elected electors, and filled out certificates to submit to Congress, claiming that they were the duly certified electors. And we now know from John Eastman's paperwork and memos that was all to set up the scheme that was all about January 6th, which was to pressure the vice president to refuse to certify the vote on January 6th on the theory that he had competing slates of electors from seven states, and therefore Biden could not be declared the victor that day. So all of these things start to fit together. And probably, I mean, it's a speculation, but certainly a theory of the committee might be that Trump had his army ready in case Pence didn't go along. And when Pence wouldn't go along, then he pulled the trigger.
These fake electors, I'm assuming they were from Georgia. With this kind of investigation, is it easier to either prosecute or subpoena somebody who is in Georgia compared to some of these other figures like Eastman, Giuliani, and Trump who are not in Georgia?
Not really. As long as the crimes occurred here in Georgia. In fact, what's going on right now is the subpoena to Senator Graham is one of them. The judge here in Atlanta has approved, in effect, subpoenas to be sent to other states where other people like Eastman and Giuliani and Graham live, for the courts in those states to serve the subpoenas on them to order them to come to Atlanta to appear in front of the grand jury. That's in motion already. So all of those people are subject to prosecution here in Georgia. But the so-called fake electors are important people. One of them, Burt Jones, is running for lieutenant governor. The chairman of the state Republican Party was sort of the head of that delegation. It's going to be very interesting. Either those people are perhaps going to be indicted for a crime, or they're going to, in effect, become witnesses against people like Eastman and Giuliani by saying, they told us what we were doing was legal and necessary, and we were deceived. We'll see how that plays out.
That would be very interesting. How significant is it, then, what's happening with Lindsey Graham and whether or not he is forced to testify? Or could this be a precedent on what happens for the rest of the committee, considering especially with its again wanting to either talk to or even charge people out of state?
Well, it's very interesting that the district attorney here, Fani Willis, has put energy into bringing a senator in front of the grand jury. I don't think she's doing that just to make a sensation. She's filed paperwork that says that he's a material witness, and that she believes the testimony from him could lead to additional evidence for the grand jury. So I suspect the district attorney believes there's a lot we don't know. The phone call that he made to Secretary of State Raffensperger was, we believe, well, actually two phone calls, but one of them was, we think, around November 13th, very soon after the election, and may have been one of the first things we've seen where someone acting apparently on behalf of Trump and his campaign are trying to interfere with the election here in Georgia. It may be the first act. And the theory that allegedly Senator Graham advanced is very much the theory that the Trump campaign pushed later on. And in fact, we know that Mark Meadows came to Georgia to talk to people who were auditing absentee ballots, got the private cell phone number of the investigator, chief investigator, and then that person got a personal phone call from President Trump the next day telling her that she could be a hero if she does the right thing in terms of how she counts and certifies these absentee ballots. So lots of it all seems to start to fit together.
I'm just trying to figure out what happens here with Lindsey Graham, though, if he continues to resist the DA and the grand jury. How does that get worked out and determined?
Well, I mean, we believe he's going to claim that as a member of the Senate, he's immune from appearing in front of the grand jury. To make that claim, he's going to have to somehow show that the phone call was on behalf of his duties as Senate chair of chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. If Senator Graham provides sworn testimony, either by affidavit or otherwise, about why he made the phone call and that it was an official phone call, or denies Raffensperger's account, and those sworn statements turn out to be false, then Senator Graham could be looking at a jail cell. That would be perjury, a felony. So the stakes could be pretty high for the senator if in fact, not only if not just in terms of lying in front of the grand jury, he might take the fifth if he appears in front of the grand jury, but if it appears that he provides false statements to the court in an attempt to avoid having you appear in front of the grand jury, I think you'd have to answer hard questions about why that phone call to the Secretary of State in Georgia was part of his official responsibilities, either as chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee or as one of the senators from the state of South Carolina.
It just seems as though people who've been involved in this, including with the committee's work at the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attacks, it just seems the people that they're investigating and potentially are going to point wrongdoing towards, that these people have successfully been able to resist the committee, and that, you know, the Justice Department really hasn't been that active, and even though it's doing its own investigation, we'll have to see what comes out of that. But other than Steve Bannon and another member, really hasn't done anything to people who've been resisting the committee. So I guess what I'm curious about is, here we have what sounds like a very serious investigation in Fulton County in Georgia, the Atlanta area, that, as you said, potentially could even have somebody like Senator Lindsey Graham in jail. Does Fulton County then, in the DA, need the assistance of the Justice Department, of federal authorities, of the states of South Carolina to be able to pull such a thing off?
I have to say, I think Fulton County's doing pretty well on its own. I will say that I wouldn't underestimate what the U.S. Department of Justice is doing. Two things have happened that haven't been mentioned, I don't think much, but I find very significant, is that the Department of Justice executed a search warrant on the home of Jeffrey Clark, the man who had attempted to take over the Department of Justice, and they executed a search warrant. They stopped John Eastman, the lawyer who was sort of behind the plan. They stopped him out as he was leaving a restaurant in Mexico and grabbed his phone. Pursuant to search warrant. Those are very significant activities on the part of the Department of Justice. Those are not just subpoenas. They had, in both cases, they had to persuade a federal judge that by searching Jeffrey Clark's home and by taking John Eastman's phone, that there was probable cause they were going to find evidence of a crime. To me, that suggests that the Department of Justice is maybe farther along than some people think.
How political is this investigation in Fulton County seen? Does it have bipartisan support? Is it caught up in the political factional fighting?
You know, I don't think particularly. I mean, President Trump has said nasty things about the prosecutor. There was some activity in New York, and he said nasty things about Fannie Willis, and, you know, she and her people have requested FBI protection. For that reason. I'm not aware of it. And we have an interesting dynamic here in Georgia, in that our governor, our lieutenant governor, our attorney general, and our secretary of state are all targets of Donald Trump, even though they're all stalwart Republicans. So the fact that she's asking for testimony from Raffensperger and the governor and Attorney General Carr, I don't think it's necessarily considered by them to be hostile. They haven't volunteered to give testimony, but they're cooperating. So she actually hasn't run into much trouble so far. We'll see if she wants to subpoena someone like Mark Meadows. One of the things about the special grand jury is they have a judge assigned to it, Judge McMurray, who's been, as far as I can see, doing a great job. And so the first, I think what he's going to do is, for example, if Rudy Giuliani says, I'm going to resist the subpoena, and I expect, you know, because I was the personal lawyer for Donald Trump, I think he, based on orders he's already issued, he's going to order Giuliani to appear, but he's going to set some ground rules and say you can't be asked what the president told you. You can't be asked what you told the president. But, for example, when you appeared in front of the Georgia Senate committee and made all these claims about fraud, what was the basis for these claims? What was your evidence? I think he can be asked about that and asked about a lot of other things he did on behalf of Donald Trump as really as a candidate. So I think it's a very powerful investigation that's going on right now.
Could either Rudy Giuliani or Mark Meadows resist such a request the same way, say, Lindsey Graham is? I mean, I understand Lindsey Graham.
The procedure is a subpoena is an order to appear. And if you fail to appear, you can be thrown in jail for contempt. But the proper procedure is to file a motion asking to quash the subpoena. And that, and as I say, there's a special Superior Court judge assigned who will hear it. We've had this happen so far. They subpoenaed some members of the Georgia legislature who made essentially the same argument that Lindsey Graham is expected to make, which is under the equivalent Georgia constitutional provision that says that members of the legislature cannot be questioned about what they say on the floor of the House or the Senate. That's going to be the same, a very similar argument we expect Senator Graham to make. But what the judge did is he said, okay, you can't be asked about certain things, but I'm still going to order you to appear in front of the grand jury, and I expect that they will.
Do you expect trials to ensue from all of this?
Well, unless people plead guilty. I mean, it's possible no indictments will issue. And the district attorney certainly isn't going to say whether she expects indictments to issue. She's going into this to see where the evidence will follow. But it does seem to me that there's very substantial evidence of crime. We have this case out in California where, on sort of a collateral matter, the judge out there has indicated that it's more likely than not that John Eastman, the lawyer, and President Trump committed two crimes. And for that reason, he's ordered John Eastman to turn over what would otherwise be attorney-client communication because it's evidence of a crime. So that's certainly a strong signal that both Eastman and former President Trump may be facing criminal liability.
What is the possibility or the likelihood of Donald Trump actually showing up in a Fulton County court being tried for all this?
Well, he's going to put up a big fight, that's for sure. And it would take quite a long time.
Just to get him there?
Well, to get to trial. There are a number of legal strategies that could be used. And of course, there's never been an attempt to criminally prosecute a former president. What I've said to others is I think we should not disregard the importance of prosecuting the people who arguably enabled this effort to overturn the election. So if people like Rudy Giuliani and John Eastman and maybe even the fake electors are held to account, then that may be more important for the country down the road than specifically whether or not Donald Trump is punished. Because what I think is important is to set a precedent that simply loyalty to a political candidate is not enough to justify breaking the law on behalf of that candidate to whom you feel loyalty.
Clark D. Cunningham has been our guest. Again, Clark Cunningham is the W. Lee Burge Chair of Law and Ethics and Professor of Law at Georgia State University. He's also the Director of the National Institute for Teaching Ethics and Professionalism. Clark Cunningham, I found that fascinating, and thank you for going through all those details with me. Appreciate it.
Glad to be on your show.